Celebrity Veteran, welcome to the Bohemican Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Coleman.
And I'm Travis Dow from the History of Alchemy Podcast.
Tonight's program centers on the unique world viewpoint that Czech people have towards outsiders, tourists, expats, fellow Europeans, and foreigners as a whole. In our discussion tonight, we will take our best shot at these generalities without painting this whole country with a wide, broad brush. So, you know, please understand that these generalities are just that, a common viewpoint held by many within and outside the borders of the Czech Republic, viewpoints forged by culture, wars, protectorates, and time itself. To make matters a bit more interesting, these interpretations are given by us, two American expats that have done a great deal of one-on-one research while living among the Czech people. So I guess you can take that for what it's worth, Travis. So we take a look at some of these ideas that we'll talk about tonight. This is a little bit of a disclaimer, isn't it? We're outsiders talking to you about how the Czechs feel about things.
But try to see it from their point of view, right? Like they've kind of been on the defensive for the last 1,000 years, okay? So they've been independent now since for like 24 years, something like that. And they're really outside of Czechoslovakia, even less, you know, about 20 years. But before that, they were under Moscow's thumb, okay? Before that, they were under Berlin's thumb. Before that, they were under Austria's thumb. And before that, they were part of the Holy Roman Empire. Even now, you know, there's a strong opposition to the European, to the EU, the European Union, because now they're just thinking, oh, well, you know, we just got rid of Moscow, and now comes Brussels, right? You know, yeah, you got it. Kind of got to understand that there's a lot going on. They have a lot of catching up to do. They were much more multicultural than they are now, especially after World War II when they kicked all the Germans out. The communists kind of enforced isolationism, you know, like they had travel restrictions. It was really difficult to get things from the West. So even, you know, Western movies, I mean, they could, on TV, if you lived in like Pilsen or close to the border, you'd get these commercials from Austria or Germany. But that's it. You couldn't. You'd see a BMW commercial. You couldn't go out and buy the car.
That seems kind of cruel, doesn't it?
Like doubly so. I mean, they knew what was happening, but at the same time, it was very isolated.
So, Travis, can you give an idea of communist rule in this country? I'm familiar somewhat with it because it's a little closer to home, especially with my in-laws. That they can tell me stories about how they smuggled in parts of the Bible. Because they couldn't really buy certain things on a religious note. They also couldn't get anything else from the West. I mean, it was very difficult to get anything. So my mother-in-law would tell me that some of her fashion magazines that were snuck in from Germany were what you just said. I mean, here's some great fashions, but by the way, you'll never get. So what they would try to do is make it on their own. So that's one thing I think the isolationism that the Czechs went through has really helped them to be really hands-on with making do with what they have, fixing what they've got, and being able to be industrious in that sense.
Building their own cottages. Well, I think basically you're going to get into stuff for a whole nother episode because this is – you get into like bonnies and, you know, the role of Coca-Cola during communism and like all these interesting things. But speaking of communism, let's jump right to the first, shall we say – stereotypical view of foreigners. Let's talk about the Russians.
That's right, Travis. The Russians are really the bear next door for the Czech Republic. They have had a love-hate relationship. I don't know how much the love is there, but let's just say that there was some infatuation from time to time through their history between the hammers.
But more like hate-hate.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's, you know, we're talking about two different eras of Russia. We're talking about, you know, the Tsarist Russia. And then, of course, communist Russia, socialist Russia. And I think that those are two different viewpoints of two different times. One thing you have to go back to is actually look at the connection when the Czech nation, the Czech people, still under Austrian-Hungarian Empire rule, they were struggling to find their own identity. It was called the Czech Revival. And this happened around the mid-1800s, heading towards the beginning of the 20th century. And that's when they started piecing together their own language again and their own cultural identity. To separate them from the Germanic rule and the Hungarian rule that they had to be under. And because of this, there was a big push to unite with their Slavic brothers. And that included people from Lithuania, Belarus, Russia, the whole nine yards. And so that there was a connection with that. You see that in some of these mural paintings that Alphonse Mucha put together dealing with the Slavic nations.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big push of this during the very beginning of the 20th century. So that was a big identity issue that they had. And, of course, that made them very close to Tsarist Russia. Now, fast forward to the part close to the end of World War I when the Bolshevik Revolution was going on in Russia. You would have a whole bunch of what they called white Russians versus the red Russians, the white Russians that were losing their battles. And at the time, President-elect Masaryk, T.G. Masaryk, had offered them asylum. And so before Czechoslovakia was even a nation, a fledgling nation at the time, they gave asylum to these white Russians from Russia to come down and live here. So the Russians at the time were making some inroads in wanting to become Czech. And so there was kind of a friendly connection with them at the turn of the 20th century. However, that connection quickly turned sour as we approached World War II. And that brought in the real kind of connection and antagonism between the Czechoslovak nation, the Soviets.
You mentioned Mucha and all that. There was a big movement for this, like, pan-Slavic state, right? Same as, you know, there was a big movement for pan-Islamic state or pan, you know, you name it, pan-German state, obviously. But the reason that this was dropped around that time, around World War II, or after World War II especially, is because there is no pan-Slavic state that is not, that doesn't, you know, isn't overbearingly Russian, okay? And Russian, even though they're Slavic, they've had a very different history within Europe than, like, the Western Slavic countries. At this point, the idea starts to get dropped, especially when they realize that a pan-Slavic state means a communist state, right? And then, so, you know, there was enough pressure from Moscow that, you know, and they were, you know, the Russians were kind of seen as liberators. They liberated Prague and everything, though not Pilsen. And so the communists won the election in 1948, and for a long time it kind of, I don't know how to say, worked out, because, you know, there was some opposition to Moscow. They were able to kind of hold their own ground, but these white Russians you mentioned would be shipped off to gulags, you know, over in Siberia.
And I think because of that, they had almost a generation to acclimate into Czech society. A lot of them were Czech citizens before the white Russians were taken back and pushed. And I think a lot of people that knew some of these white Russian immigrants for many years knew that, oh, there's something askew here. This is not what this brand new, you know, one world sort of workers unite mentality. This is kind of souring me in the idea. Because in 1948, you know, these elections, people were tired, they were war weary, and they were promised something from this idea that everyone was going to be equal and everyone's going to share in the slice of the pie, and government was going to take care of you. That's kind of a really nice idea after a horrible one of the worst wars in human history. So the Czechs grasped at that. You know, they really didn't really feel that this was going to be something oppressive until maybe a little bit later on. In 1948, right, there still was hope.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, they still had their own, their independence. People could go to Moscow and push back. Or, you know, this Gottwald would say, okay, I'm a communist leader, but don't worry. I got this.
Czech President Gottwald.
Yeah, right. the communist.
One thing, Travis, that really encapsulates the feeling between the Czechs and their Soviet leaders at the time is the statue that once was that is not now, and that would be the statue of Stalin that was on top of Letna Hill. Now, to give you an idea, overlooking the entire city after World War II in the 1950s was this gigantic stone statue of Stalin leading a procession of workers uniting and soldiers uniting behind him in a very majestic stance overlooking the entire Vltava Valley.
Majestic stance of a bread line waiting for...
Yeah, tell us the story.
Well, it's just a joke because the Czechs would say, like, oh, they're all in line. They're just like in Moscow. They must be waiting for bread, right?
Right. And so.
But you said it was the biggest. It was the biggest Stalin statue ever
in the entire world. Yeah. And it's one of those deals that the architect and artist that put this together actually committed suicide after this. He was very upset that he was commissioned to do this. this giant
Ouch.
Statue.
Yeah.
Today it's a pendulum. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. Now there's some symbolic artistic meaning to
a metronome.
It's a metronome, yeah. And it does. It's actually kinetic movement. It moves. Sometimes it's on. Sometimes it's off, depending. But it overlooks this whole city on Letna Park on the hill overlooking Prague.
If you're looking down Pražská, down the Jewish quarter, you're looking straight at it. Like it's just majestic over the thing there.
But the whole artistic idea is nothing from nothing. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now can you explain
that?
That
gives you a great insight into Czech mentality. It's just, you know, throughout their history, they've, you know, first the Hussites and the Catholics and the other, you know, the War of 1812 and then the Austrians and the Germans and then the Czechs. And every time, you know, you're putting up these generals and then Hussite generals and Catholic saints, and then you're putting up Austrian generals and Nazi generals and communist ones. And finally, they're just like, you know what? Forget about it. It's just going to be from nothing to nothing. That's where we're going.
That's what the pendulum means.
And yeah, but it, like, I'll tell you that. Because a block from my house is Vinohradská, which is, you know, a big major street. And that's the same kind of thing. Like, that used to be Stalinova. It's, you know, right, I can see it out my window. So Stalin Street. And again, those were, you know, under Austrian days, it was named after some Austrian general or some famous Austrian guy. And then the Germans named after it some Nazi. And then they named it after Stalin. And then they're like, you know what, forget about it. We're just going to call it Vineyard Street. So hopefully it can kind of stick with that name for more than, you know, 10 years at a time.
And it's interesting. There's nothing left of this other than a giant platform in Letna. And it's used for skateboarders and, of course, this giant pendulum. But if you ever look at old pictures of this, you can go online, folks, and take a look at it, or go to my website at bohemican.com. There's a picture of that under Czech history of what once was there. And it is huge and god awful.
You know, the whole joke of that statue, right? Opinion. Like, you know why it was built?
Why?
Like, because the statue was built for Stalin's birthday, right? But he never actually saw it. So he died before his birthday. So, and there's even, you can look on YouTube and when they blew it up, because then, you know, so they built it for his birthday. He died. He never saw it. The biggest statue of him ever. And then Khrushchev decided that, oh, Stalin was bad after all. So then they blew it up. And you can see that it's a great explosion. It's in black and white, you know, it's the communist days, but so that's, you know, that's the whole thing. Like, he never even saw it. So the biggest thing ever. And yeah,
I think that it basically tells the feeling of the Czechs in a lot of ways, of having Papa Stalin not be there anymore.
They call it socialism with a face. You know, they had more, I mean, it was like the Prague Spring, 68, right? So they're really starting to kind of open up. And the Soviets said, enough's enough. This is, you know, you're not really listening to Moscow. You're not really doing what we say. And this is a famous event. This is, you know, Jan Palach and the kind of uprising, and followed by all the invasions of all the socialist neighbors. So like Poland and East Germany and Hungary. Not the Russians themselves. This was like carefully planned.
That's exactly right. The Warsaw Pact folks soldiers came in. A lot of them were Poles,
right?
And they came in. And I'll tell you, my wife told me this from her grandfather, that this happened early in the morning, and the tanks rolled in, and everything was shaking, and people were still kind of heading off to work, and they see these tanks coming down the street. And a lot of people just started climbing on the tank, you know, talking to these Polish tank drivers saying, what are you doing? Don't do this to us. We're like you. We're like you. And there was a lot of confusion. And because of this, there were new rules set up by the Soviet military forces that about keeping your distance from people that you're supposed to be, you know, oppressing or keeping under your heel, because there was a lot of breakdown in some of this military steadfastness to get the job done during this time. But this was a heavy time around the world. I want you to think about this from an American standpoint. Vietnam War is going crazy at this point. It's one of the deadliest years in the Vietnam War in the United States. We have flower power going on. You have uprising of young people. That happened here too. That happened here in
this
Prague.
This is the '60s. For years after that, that's when the real Czechoslovakia, you know, they had a much more direct connection to Moscow. So Moscow would much more directly be involved in who actually ran the Czechoslovakia, and it became a much more conservative country within, you know, the Warsaw Pact countries.
was a very difficult time here during those years.
Well, the bullet holes, so they came up with tanks on Wenceslas Square, and the bullet holes, they're just now patching them up. I mean, you can still see the white things where they just patched them up. Skip ahead to the Velvet Revolution. The Russians are still here in a very different shade, coat. How do you want to say that?
Pink. They weren't quite red. They were a little pink.
The pinkos, is that what you're saying?
No, it was a different sort of feel, because this is the era of glasnost, and things were starting to fall apart in the former satellite countries and throughout Europe.
Oh, and Poland, Russia itself.
Exactly. Everything was falling to pieces, and the Czechs were somewhat ready, because you had guys like, soon to be President-elect Havel eventually was going to keep his promise with Charter 77, which was, their idea of pushing back and saying, why can't we govern ourselves in a more democratic fashion? And this would come to fruition during the Velvet Revolution, a very peaceful transition out of communism into democracy.
Right. So, so the Russians still here, but in a very different shade, which is organized crime.
It was proven that they moved operations out of the Russian Federation into other countries such as Poland and specifically Czech Republic, because it was the Wild West here in the 1990s. There were people in the West that would come over here saying, oh, I'm going to start my own business because there's not a lot of control. Some Americans were thinking, I'm just going to just open up businesses and rake in the money.
Yeah.
And some of them had a lot of scams that were going on here against the Czech
scams
people.
Scams is the key word.
Right,
yeah, yeah.
And a lot of that was Russian-led. So, mm-hmm. There's some of that here still today, of course, with some of the vices that we have in big cities, specifically in Prague. We talked about this in previous podcasts. You can go down to Wenceslas Square, and there will be a red light area for prostitution. You can pick up an assortment of drugs, illegal drugs. And a lot of that money is going through either former Russian citizens or current Russian citizens in a mafia sort of family crime syndicate. So, Travis, looking ahead, the next group of people are pretty much the country that occupies a huge border of the Czech Republic today, and that would be Germany. We talked about the bear at the door when it came to the Russians, and now we're going to talk about the wolf at the door, which would be the Germanic people.
One thing you have to consider is that now Czech Republic is really Czech, okay? But for, let's say, 1,000 years, it was really a bilingual, bicultural country until the end of World War II, when they finally had enough of that. So this might be like the most controversial a group of foreigners to talk about in Czech Republic, but there's definitely Germans here today that have come back since the Velvet Revolution. Not even come back. It's different Germans. They're, it's not like the Germans living here today had their grandparents living here. No, probably not. So it's the same kind of thing with the Russians. The Czechs are stuck between these two giant cultures, and they're a little itsy-bitsy country. Obviously, there's some especially historically, there's some worry. Like you said, they have this huge border, especially when Silesia and Prussia was part of Germany. It looks like you take this Slavic bite out of German-speaking, because, Austria is to the south, Prussia was to the north, Germany to the west. So it's just you take this Slavic bite out of German-speaking country. And it's a miracle that they're even there in the first place, because to the north, like Lithuanians and all those Prussians even spoke Slavic. And it was these Teutonic Knights that kind of, converted them and slowly but surely made them speak German. So the Czechs, they didn't do that. They had to have a cultural revival, like you mentioned earlier. And after World War II, they forcibly removed all the Germans from Czech Republic, which is, it's controversial again.
To say it's controversial probably is downplaying it. It was ugly, yeah. Wasn't it?
Right. Well, I'm not sure how much I want to get into that right now, but
because it's still touchy. It's a really touchy, sensitive subject.
Exactly. I mean, this has been discussed and philosophized over ad nauseum since the war, and the obviously the one side will say, well, they deserved it, right?
Now, before we go any further, we're talking about the borderlands that are connected between Bohemia and the German people.
Well, that's where like 90% of the population was German, but we're talking about all Bohemia. Just all Germans were kicked out. Prague was, I don't know, I don't want to give false numbers, but I mean, it wasn't 50-50. But Germans were a significant minority, let's put it like that. And yeah, you know what you're talking about, like Sudetenland and Shumovan, that it might have been 90% Germans. So they're all gone now. In fact, that's why Shumovan is a nice national park, because there's just no one there. But you look at the demographics from before the war. I mean, it was a German-speaking part. So yeah, so there were a lot of them were kicked out, and you know, objectively in a bad way, just with the clothes on their backs and you know, shoved into the freezing mountains to the German border. And the Czechs will say, well, it was deserved, okay? I mean, look at what they did to us, you know, the concentration camps, you know, the Nazis. I mean, you know, sure. On the other hand, and, well, I mean, me personally, like, I don't believe in group guilt at all. So it's hard to say that it was deserved, you know, for something else or as revenge. However, the Czechs have been, for 1,000 years, this has kind of been the thorn in their side. They didn't have one single national identity. And there's just examples all over Prague where you see everything in two languages, or, you know, like the Germans used to walk what is now Na Příkopě, which is Am Graben. So the Sunday walks, Germans would walk up that way, and then the other side, kind of towards the river, and then the other side is Narodní třída, the national street. And the Czechs would walk up that way, right?
So, you've told me that before, Travis, and that's very interesting.
So Prague was segregated.
Yeah, segregated.
Pilsen was probably more Germans than Czech. I mean, Budweiss, you know, Český Budějovice was more Germans than Czech. I'm not sure if that's true, but significant, you know. And so it's just kind of, you look at old maps of Prague, they're all in German, because that's just the ruling class was German. Wenceslas Square was Wenzelplatz, and before that it was Rossmarkt, the horse market.
Right, because where the National Museum is on the top of Wenceslas Square was actually the horse gate.
Yeah, that was the way into town.
That was the way into town during the Middle Ages,
So to bring it back to modern days, obviously there's a lot of baggage there. Let's just put it like that. There's a lot of baggage, and Czechs are not entirely blameless. I mean, you know, I don't believe in group guilt. Is it what they did in 45? Was it right? No, it wasn't. You know, did it need to happen? I'm not touching that one with a 40-foot pole, okay? But there was a lot of revenge thinking and kind of, you know, cold-blooded actions. And so, yeah, that still taints and colors the viewpoint of them today.
I think, especially when you talk about the Sudetenland, this reminds me a part of an American history that some of our listeners might be familiar with. During the Revolutionary War, was at the time between the colonialists that were loyal to the revolutionaries, there were many of their neighbors which were called Tories or loyalists, loyal to the crown, the English crown.
Yeah.
And it was just an excuse to take up old rivalries with your neighbors, to kill them or take what they have.
Yeah.
And this happened very, very similarly to this following World War II. And I think, you know, it is bad blood in that sense. But time has a tendency to heal a lot of wounds, even though people have a long memory.
Well, but here's the ironic part. And just to bring it back to the modern day, that if you look at Czech culture, what they're proud of, or even what they're not proud of, but what is this? Czech, as Czech can be, knedlik. Oh, you mean knödel?
Right.
An Austrian dish? Sauerkraut, pork, beer? You know, I mean, just so much of what they think of as Czech culture, you cannot distinguish from Bavarian or Austrian culture. In fact, that's one of the first things when I, you know, quote unquote, got off the boat here, I was like, oh man, this is the same food that I had when I was a kid. I mean, I was at home right away. They're like, oh, you like the heavy Czech meals? I'm like, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, sauerkraut, Zemmel, knödel, and, you know, it's just the same things as I had when I was growing up. So it's,
you know, and for
no
one
difference, really.
For one thing of food to a viewpoint of economics now, Germany is a huge player in the European Union. Czech Republic's part of the European Union. There's a lot of business that goes back and forth between Germany and Czech Republic now. So they are dealing with each other on an economic basis, and I think there's a little bit more respect, I think, in the sense of how they're running their country, which seems to be above boards compared to a lot of the other problems we see in the EU today. I think that helps a little bit with the healing process of having a good neighbor. So, you know, we'll see how things go with that. But you're right. Czech Republic as well as Poland can say the same thing. They're stuck between the Russian bear and the German wolf.
Another great example. Yeah.
Yeah. And they've had to find a way to hold on to their identity and survive.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, I mean, I would say, I don't want to paint it bleak, you know, but you know, I'd say that time is the great healer here. Like, you know, the younger generation, I don't think they have as much of a problem with Germans or, you know, foreigners in general as their parents. And I think part of that is that they're just exposed to them from grade zero. I mean, you know, they're born and they're next door neighbors with Vietnamese on one side and Russians on the other. It's just, you know, their parents weren't used to that as
If
much.
we have a little bit of time tonight, I'd like to probably jump into the Vietnamese aspect of things too, because there's a huge population of Vietnamese expatriates that have that live just to the south side of Prague. We'll talk about that when we do the what's left of the viewpoint of foreigners from the Czech standpoint. But let's jump right into probably the closest of the Czech neighbors that were very interesting bedfellows during a huge chunk of the 20th century, and that would be their Slovak brothers. All right, so Slovakia, probably the most affable sort of divorce you could probably ever hear of. You know, that probably goes against pretty much anybody that I've known that said that there could ever be a nice, clean divorce. This actually proves that there could be.
Well, compare this to Yugoslavia or, you know, any other kind of ugly split at the same time. It's just Chechnya or any, you know, the I mean, yeah, it just not a shot was fired. It was just kind of sitting over a table.
Could you imagine
The
that? Here's a
velvet
table.
divorce,
Yeah, the
right?
Velvet Divorce. You know, the Velvet Revolution comes in. Czechoslovakia, at the time, President Václav Havel really was wanting to keep this nation together as Czechoslovakia. But you know, it has to. You have to go again and back to the beginnings. And most of the things we see in Europe today, the seeds were laid in the ground because of World War I. And this was one of those other examples. World War I. Allowed Czechoslovakia to come into existence. And if it wasn't for the idea of the Americans trying to push for a unified country and the Czechs trying to push for a unified country just to have something, there wouldn't be no Czechoslovakia. It'd probably be divvied up by the victorious Allied powers at the time. So this was their only way to have a unified country of some sort, was to have this marriage arranged. And that's what it was, an arranged marriage between the Slovak nation and the Czechs. And together they made Czechoslovakia. So, yeah, this was kind of an odd beginning to a marriage to begin with. But if you could sit at that table for the divorce proceedings, as we like to call it, in 1993, across the table you had the Slovaks. The other side you had the Czechs. You sure you want to go? Yeah, I really want to go. You know, we're kind of different people. We're more Catholic than you guys are. We
Well,
have different histories. We want our own way to go at this point.
yeah, I mean, if you, one way to see it, because I always thought it was kind of strange, because they are so similar. Czechs and Slovaks, the culture out of from the West Slavic languages, they're mutually intelligible, which means I wouldn't even say they're different languages. I'd say they're different dialects of the same thing, but don't tell that to a Slovak.
No, yeah,
But I would argue they are, and you
yeah.
could linguistically argue that they are the same
I
language.
would almost
But
say it's like an American trying to talk to an Australian. I mean, you could
something
probably
like
figure it
that,
out, but there'll
yeah.
probably be some
It's
puzzled
more of,
looks.
but so
Yeah.
the thing is that they did have very different histories. But the border between Moravia and Bohemia is the border between East and West in so many ways. And so Slovakia was never independent. They grasp at straws. They say that they were part of Greater Moravia, you know, like 1,200 years ago, because one of the capitals of Greater Moravia is a tiny little village in Slovakia. Okay, so you know, from Greater Moravia, the Czechs have the same heroes that the Slovaks do, but they were never independent. They were Hungarian right away after that, and they were until World War I. Now the thing is, when they're sitting around this table, so you think, well, they're doing so great since World War I. What happened? Well, they weren't. Because after World War I, Czechs put a lot of money into Slovakia, which was really rural, and Bohemia was really industrialized. Okay? And that went on the whole time. However, so Slovaks kind of resented them in a way as saying, oh, well, you're being too big brotherly to us. And Bohemia or Czech Republic is going like, well, hey, you're really a drain on our economy. And it kind of turned to like that. Well, you know what? We don't need you anymore. You know, and they say, oh, really? You think you can do it better without us? Huh? Go ahead, see what happens. You'll be crawling back in 5 years. And they didn't. You know, they had economic reforms right away. They, you know, they did pretty well.
They had some struggles with a presidency that wanted to stay a little longer than maybe he should have. But they had their own constitution. You know, the funny part about it is talk about the difference of the national anthems. You know, the Czech national anthem, the second version at least.
I don't even know what either
It's very sweet. You know, it's "Where's My Home." And it's very melodic, and it's about flowing streams and rolling hills. And then you hear the Slovaks, which is thunder and lightning. And it's just – I mean, it's got some gravitas to it.
Yeah.
And whenever these two play a hockey game together, you kind of know that that the Slovaks make up a huge minority of foreigners in the Czech Republic, because just go to a game between the Czech Republic and Slovakia, and if the Slovaks actually score a goal, you're like, okay, where are we again? Is this Prague? No, you know, no, it doesn't feel like it, because there's so many Slovaks here, and so that connection is there.
Yeah, I mean, we're in Prague, and I have more Slovak friends than Czech friends.
Yeah, it's a beautiful country. You know, it's a country where you can go and see amazing mountain ranges. You can actually see some natural wildlife, which you don't really see here too much in Bohemia. Bears, maybe so, even. You know, so I mean, it is kind of the frontier. But they are the little brother.
It's more rural. Yeah.
They are the little brother to Bohemia in a lot of ways.
I mean, here's the thing, like it's. So this is you see this in all kinds of, you know, interstate boundaries in the States, other countries within Europe. So if one sees the other as a little brother, let's say Czechs see Slovaks as a little brother, Slovaks are going to see Czechs as arrogant.
Right.
And this is, you see this anywhere where one's more industrialized and they look down on the other. You know, it's just kind of. I mean, that's just how it is.
I would say it's more – again, this is from an expat.
I would say it's very friendly.
It's very friendly. It's,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe a little bit like, you know, the relationship between America and Canada. You know, and just by saying America, I'm ticking off a lot of Canadians because, you know, they consider themselves North Americans. It's a kind of a friendly sort of rivalry, which I really embrace. And I'm saying that with a lot of Canadian friends listening, I hope. Not anymore. Not anymore, exactly. It's a show for all peoples. I should probably calm down, shouldn't I?
How do Czechs see Americans?
That's a very interesting way of thinking about that. I think they see us like most Europeans, loudmouths, tourists that wear white socks with sandals.
So objectively, then.
Exactly. You know, it is interesting, Travis. What, you know, you've lived here a little bit longer than I have. What have you seen as changes as far as American pop culture or businesses that have popped up around Czech Republic and Prague? Has it exploded, or is it something that's been trickled in?
Well, see, I have a different point of view because I've lived outside of the States for more than half my life. So the other thing I can compare it to really well is how Germans see Americans, and especially Munich was the American sector, right? So there are a lot of army brats, a lot of big influence. So there's even the old military TV and everything. Now, Czechs, in comparison, have had very little influence. An expat community in the East, so like you'll find Americans that run bars and run restaurants or something like that. But in Germany, Americans are just everywhere. It's just, you know, through and through part of society. There's an American here, a German there.
Many Americans will come in to Czech Republic and say, okay, Prague's going to be my location I'm going to go to. I might even go to Český Krumlov because it's on the UNESCO World Heritage Site, so I might make a day trip out of that. Maybe I'll even go work in Brno as an expat because I've got a big telecommunications network hub down there as well, closer to Vienna. But you know, when you get throughout the rest of the country, I mean, you get people
speaking,
you're going to struggle. You need to know Czech or be able to at least try. And I think the Czech people will appreciate you trying. They know right away that you're American or Brit.
Well, another thing is that one thing I've noticed is that they have a harder time understanding accents because they're not used to foreigners. Germans can deal with any kind of foreign accent. Just like, dude. Americans can deal with any kind of foreign accents because we've heard it all before a million times.
It's a mixed bag back home.
Czechs have a harder time just understanding what you're trying to say, Czech is a difficult language.
Right.
But if you just say something, they've never heard it before. They haven't heard you, an American, trying to speak Czech. So they just don't know what you're saying because...
You know? And I think that there's also there's an American friendliness as there is in Poland to the Americans for many decades, and some of it goes back even to the Revolutionary War times in Poland, that there was a connection with the fledgling American Republic, but in Bohemia, a lot of those positive viewpoints come again in World War I with President Woodrow Wilson, who was a rock star at the time in 1918 and 1919, trying to put together some kind of workable new Europe Union and the League of Nations. And so with President Masaryk, they tried to make a friendly connection. Actually, President Masaryk's wife was American.
Right.
You know, so you know, there was that connection. You can even drive down one of the major arteries here on the road. It's called Wilsonova, named after President Wilson. There's a big statue of him downtown.
The main train station was called Wilsonova.
Right. You know, so those connections are there.
But they now in Pilsen, that's, you know, because we liberated Pilsen in World War II. And like, I'd be sitting at the Hofbräuhaus or Oktoberfest somewhere in Munich, and some guy goes, "Oh, you're American." And, well, you know, I remember when the Americans came through and I got my first orange or my first pack of chewing gum, you know, chewing gum or whatever, you know.
Or a Hershey chocolate bar.
Or chocolate, yeah.
Yeah.
And, but here, you know, the communists made it a point. I mean, we were sitting in Pilsen twiddling our thumbs. The communists made it a point that the Russians would liberate Prague. And then for years after that, you know, there was this anti-Western propaganda. So some were fooled, a lot were fooled, some were not so much, but you just didn't have this continuous 70 years of pro-Western sentiment.
And that is really evident in something that happens every May in Pilsen, in Western Bohemia, and that is the Thank You to America weekend that they've started doing every year for the past, I think, 10 years or so, because the Americans had come through with the armored division, Patton's armored division, Third Army, came through and liberated all of Western Bohemia. And so there's stories of Czech women that were married off to American GIs and moved back to the United States and have that connection. Yeah. They come back. Unfortunately, there's a lot of World War II veterans that are dying and are too old to make the trip anymore, but they still do these parades. And I actually went to Pilsen last year for it, and I had a blast. They have, you know, a lot of reenactors come out dressed as Brits and Americans, and driving old Jeeps and old army situations out there, and they have a full weekend dedicated to Thank You to America. There's a giant obelisk that says thanks to the United States for our liberation. Now, why is this interesting? Because it was exactly what you said, Travis. For years, the communists told them that didn't happen.
Right.
And so unless you lived it and knew that it was a bunch of hogwash, there were a lot of people that grew up saying, the Russians liberated us.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until after 1989 that there was a big push saying, no, young man, that's not how it happened. This was real history. And so it is kind of neat to go see that.
Well, yeah, I think Pilsners kind of know. And again, you know, even during communism, they were close enough to Germany that they got the TV. They could watch German – it was against the law, but they could watch German stations if they have a TV good enough to receive it. I mean, so yeah, they're much less susceptible to the propaganda.
And you mentioned airwaves and telecommunications. Radio Free Europe. It was broadcasting out of Berlin during the Cold War before it moved to Prague. And now it's located Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, so one entity, funded by the U.S. Congress, is based here in Prague now. But it was based in Berlin, and it was giving the only information, Western information, to the people of the Soviet satellite nations. So, you know, they did get a little bit on the airwaves if they could pick it up. But now things are a little bit different. Now it's very easy to go get a Big Mac at McDonald's right down the street.
Starbucks is everywhere.
Starbucks is everywhere. I know for an American, we kind of cringe a little bit at that. But I'm not going to lie to you. Every once in a while, it's kind of nice to have a little taste of home, even if it's fast food or a cup of coffee. But
speak for yourself, Coleman.
Yeah, well, I've seen you out. So I think that, you know, the thing is that when you move over here, you want to embrace what is foreign. And I really do love seeing that. But for an average Czech, yeah, there's a lot of American pop culture here.
Well, Like some of my favorite Czech dishes is Kentucky Fried Chicken or chicken wings at Hooters.
And don't forget, you can see the IMAX. You can see, any Western movie in English at the IMAX down the street here in Prague.
And that,
You
yeah,
know?
that's one thing I like is that the movies here aren't dubbed because in Germany they, they had every movie you ever wanted dubbed and dubbed professionally, greatly. It's horrible. But here they just don't even bother. I mean, they're actually really famous for their dubbing and everything. So if you watch like a, child's movie or something like Disney, there it's great. It's done really well. But yeah, if you watch normal movies, just in subtitles, which yeah.
I think for an American expat, you would have a pretty good time living here in that sense because people are very friendly. They hold Americans in a pretty good light. But one recommendation I always have is represent yourself pretty well. Try not to speak as loud as you normally would back home.
Now you tell
I know
me.
it's hard not to do. It really
Jeez.
is. I feel like I'm in the library sometimes. but I think that with that level of respect of trying to speak Czech and being polite and those type of things go a long way in making a positive attitude towards Americans.
Well, I mean, we're here and we obviously both love it. So, okay, Americans covered. What's
Got it. What's
who
next?
else?
Let's do the mixed bag.
All right.
All right, we have a lot of little things about things. One of my favorite sayings here that I never understood was being drunk like a Dane. All right, now Dane is
Well,
someone from Denmark. So someone's Danish. So
they got to pick on somebody,
they got. I
right?
know,
Because
but here's the funny part about this. Just a few weeks ago, and this is in 2013, there was a group of high school kids coming down for their winter break, and they all decided just to pick Prague. Right, because you could find a way to get beer, I guess, pretty easily down here
sure.
as a younger person, and they came down
As
without
a
any,
kid, you mean?
as a kid, yeah,
Yeah.
without any hotel reservations. They were going to work it out when they got down here. So there was like over 100 kids, and they got drunk off their tails, and they caused fights, and they caused general chaos, and it was a pretty rough weekend. So maybe they did play into that whole idea of being drunk like a Dane, but. You know that's saying something when the of all of Europe, Czechs drink more beer per capita than anybody else
Well, they drink more per capita in the world.
in the
Not
world. Yeah,
more
that's
alcohol, but more beer.
more beer, and they can put away the alcohol. But the funny thing is, have you ever seen a lot of bar fights between Czechs? I haven't.
Never. Well, okay, define fight because like thrown punches, not one ever.
I have never seen
Loud
it.
words, voices raised, even I saw someone chasing someone with a golf club.
Well,
But
interesting.
yeah,
But there's a level of
but
politeness,
actual
isn't there?
punches
Yeah.
thrown, never. And I can't say that of my hippie, peace-loving home state of Oregon. So that's
Yeah, I think I do find that very interesting that they can put away the alcohol, but that those incidents are few and far between. And unfortunately, the Danes get this kind of moniker from the Czechs that you're drunk like a Dane. I mean, it's not a good thing to be told. What about the Brits? Speaking of drinking, Brits in the Czech
Well,
Republic, what are they
I
like?
would say, no matter what horrible, loud, obnoxious thing you can say about the Americans, I'd say you could be worse.
That would be the Brits.
That would be the Brits. Yeah. Well, because I remember Oktoberfest from years back, and I remember in the 80s, if it was a loud table, it would be the Americans. Nowadays, if it's a loud table, they're either Spanish or Latin American or British. It's no, we're not the loud table.
At some point, the Czechs will tell you, and Czech buddies will tell you that there might be a travel agency. I don't know what's going on, but based on any place in England, if you're going to have a bachelor party, you come to Prague, because you can use your British pounds and just live like a king down here on the Czech crown for a nice long
I
weekend.
have some fun stories from my tour guide days that just to tell one, I was telling a story about the Kinski Palace right down in Old Town Square, and I saw these 30 people. See, like sometimes tourists, because I was wearing a top hat and wearing a lantern from U.S. Army lantern from World War I. So I mean, I was just a target. Drunken people would come up to me like, "Oh, what are you doing? Why you got that lantern?" So I see 30 people dressed up as Baywatch characters with the little red things that they would
The
jump on.
buoys,
Yeah, the little
yeah.
red buoys. Short shorts, guys. So like 20, 25 guys, short shorts, the orange shirt, all said Baywatch on it with their nicknames on the back, and they're coming straight at me with their little red buoys. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. And right when they get about, a couple of feet from me, one of them goes, I don't remember what he said, but he has something.
Oi.
He says, and they all drop to the floor on their buoys and start pretending to swim on the cobblestones right in Old Town Square. So we all just kind of stop and watch it, you know, and then they're like, and then they get up and like, all right, you know, see you later. And you know, they take off and I'm like, all right, well, so, you know, and then that happened.
God save the queen.
And then I finished my Kinski brothers story, you know, so yeah, it's
they tear it up. They tear it up down here.
It's interesting. It's interesting.
You know, they hit the gentlemen's clubs, they hit the bars, and then they call it a week, and they go back home, and they leave a wake behind them here. So I don't think that Czechs have a lot of happiness when they see the Brits come in. But of course, you know, we work with Brits. There's a lot of Brits down here as well, and they have the same sort of experience as we have as Americans. They if they're here and living here, they love it like we do.
Well,
and it's a great place to raise a family.
With the random tourists on the street, Germans can tell whether it's British or American. Just drop of a hat right away, a mile away, just like that's American, that's a Brit. Czechs can't.
No, it's so funny.
So yeah, they just can't tell. So it's just, you know, I bet Brits get blamed for stuff that we do, and we get blamed for stuff that they do. And it's
Have you ever had this happen to you? I mean, someone you've been talking to somebody in English, yeah, and they're like, "So where are you from, Great Britain?" No.
Like, really?
Really? I'm wearing a baseball hat and a you know, and it's like, no, I thought it would be like dead on call that you're an American, but I don't know. Yeah, I think because of that isolationism for a long time, people didn't leave this part of the world. They didn't, you know, but young people now, I think they're exposed, you know, social networking.
We'll learn them. We'll learn them.
social networking has really done wonders on opening up any ideas of xenophobia with the Czechs. And I think unlike ever before, they're able to get information and think about even moving away from home.
Yeah, what other English speaking minorities?
Oh, Kiwis.
Yeah.
Kiwis. Folks from New Zealand. I don't know too many Australians.
They have stereotypes for
because here's the deal. For over 10 years now, there's a unique visa issue so that you can stay here for a longer time if you're from New Zealand. I don't know what the situation is, but same thing with the Canadians. That they have a different relationship than the Americans do with the Czech government. If you're Canadian, you have to have a visa, and they make you jump through hoops. They won't even let you off the train if you don't have this visa. That, you know, for an American, you can come on in, do what you need to do. You know, you can stay here, go to the embassy and renew your visa if you need to. But Canadians have a hard time. Kiwis, they just let them on in, which is great because if you go to any of these parks in Prague, somewhere in late summer and fall, you can see nothing but rugby matches. All right, so the guys from New Zealand are you can definitely tell where they're from at certain points on the rugby pitch. So,
that's,
you know, that is interesting. But there's one group of people that we want to mention before we wrap up the show tonight, and this is kind of a touchy subject for many Czechs, but some of them will call them the gypsies, but I think it's a really derogatory term. They might be probably better off called Romani.
Right.
Or, you know, Roma. And these are a group of, at times, nomadic people that come through not only Czech Republic, but other parts of Central Europe as well. And they either stay for a while or, you know, either for a long time or they move on. But I think there's a lot of anger and mistrust between the Czech people and the Romani, and that's also true in Italy and a few other places. But why it's a touchy subject is, you know.
Oh man, that's a tricky issue.
It's a tricky issue.
I mean, I would just say that it's a very different culture. They're not sedentary. They're very, you know, like the communists didn't like them because they just couldn't do a census. They just couldn't figure out. They couldn't tax them. They couldn't, you know, there was no way to. They didn't go to school. So how are you going to feed them propaganda? They just weren't part of society.
And before that, the Nazis just exterminated them.
Yeah,
I mean they were on the top three list of exterminations.
Right.
You know, so I mean, yeah, they've had a rough go of it.
But Nazi, I mean, they just hid in the woods, and they definitely survived that better than the Jewish population of Czech Republic. So it's really hard to tell. I mean, it's hard to get into that without being biased one way or another. Like I've heard a lot of weird stories that just wouldn't make sense to you and me. That they would fail the social programs because they would burn the wallpaper, or you give them chickens for eggs and they would eat the chickens the next day, or, you know, and it's just, it's hard to say, like, you know, how much of that is bias, how much of that is even true.
Well, look at it this way. What was your idea before you moved here? For me, I hate to say this, but my concept was a stereotypical concept of gypsies.
Well, from the old werewolf movies.
You know, they were in these...
The traveling carnival,
exactly.
The fortune tellers.
That was it.
That's not here.
No.
Here they're just thieves and, you know, just... I mean, I'm not saying they're thieves. I'm saying their perception of them are, you know, is very low.
I'm
not going to say there's something to it, because look at the other things. Like you mentioned Vietnamese, and Vietnamese, they're everywhere because they had this, guest worker program back, you know, started
in
communism.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they came here, and now you look at any, you know, like if you're in France and you go to the corner market, you're saying, I'm going to the Arabs. Or if I want something to eat in Germany, I say, I'm going to the Turks, even if he's not Turkish. Or in Paris, even if he's not Arab, you just say that. And here, even if it's a Czech guy at the corner market, I say, I'm going to the Vietnamese. I don't care where he's from, but all the corner markets are owned by Vietnamese, whether it's true or not. You know, a lot of the Chinese restaurants are owned by Vietnamese. And it's just because they're really hard workers. And now it's clear they're not going away. Their kids are going to school with Czech kids. They all speak Czech. They speak Czech better than me. Well, that's not hard. But whereas the gypsies is different. It's hard to if there's a lot of stereotypes that even if they do go to school, they come from such a different angle. They don't do well in school. You know, the teachers instantly assume that they're kind of, you know, of lesser intellect and they're not going to make it. And this is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Whereas Vietnamese come in and they had those stereotypes to begin with, but they worked so hard and they tried so hard to kind of make it within the society that, you know, now a young Vietnamese kid comes in first grade and the teacher instantly thinks, oh man, they're going to, you know, he's Vietnamese. It's going to do great. And he does. So it's, you know, it's this cycle, which we have in the States too.
Exactly. I think everybody does. One thing that amazes me is that racism is alive and well here in Europe. I thought we had an issue in the United States, but actually we talk about our issues in the United States. We may not agree on anything, and we may have some rough things to say to each other, but there is dialogue. There's not dialogue here other than yelling at people. And so there's a lot of racism here, and you'll see that as a reflection in some of the sports and in soccer, that they actually have to say no to racism in the stands, because you'll have people mocking somebody from Africa, you know, because of their skin color, playing in the European Soccer League.
There's a bigger than normal skinhead and neo-Nazi movement.
That's something to kind of to measure itself and kind of think about that a little bit. But I will tell you that was somewhat shocking to me, coming from Atlanta, where there's a very big African American community. Living here after a while, I started looking around, going, "Wow, everything's very very white here.
Homogenous.
It's very homogenous." You know, and I miss having some of that culture around me, and also miss. Seeing anybody that's darker skinned. This is where the gypsies come in, and this is what's interesting. I have seen this down the street where people will give dirty, dirty looks someone with dark hair, olive complexion, you know, gypsy complexion, dark eyes, and either not talk to them when they're sitting at the table to take their order, and they just get up in a huff and leave.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting, whoa, this is heavy. This is not what I expect here. It is very difficult, I think, and that's in Prague. And Brno, it's really the second largest city in Czech Republic near Moravia, has a very big gypsy community, or as we like to say, Romani community, and you know, they have their issues down there as well of trying to get, you know, fair representation. So. You know, that might be another issue for another show, and of course, we always offer this for our listeners. Please send us some emails, through bohemican.com. If you have some comments about this, as two American expats, we're taking a foreigner look into this and trying to give you an idea about how the Czechs feel about this. We're probably missing the point in some respects. So, you know, please feel free to give us some insight to this. We'd be more than welcome.
Well, this is a great episode that we want to hear your stories. If you have some experience,
and we'll read it. We'll read it on the next podcast. Absolutely. Yeah. So, but you know, that's pretty much all the time we have tonight. We covered a lot, actually, in our time together this evening. Before we go, I want to give you some ideas from our bibliography, which kind of helped a lot besides our personal one-on-one interviews and relations that we have with some Czech people here. And that would be Czechs in a Nutshell, a book that is used quite a bit in research with the Czech people. It's a funny book by Terje Englund. And The Xenophobe's Guide to the Czechs by Petr Burka.
So yeah, Xenophobe's Guide to the Czechs. All right.
It's a fun, quick read. Absolutely. Well, that'll about do it for this episode on Bohemican Podcast. I want to thank you very much for tuning in this week. We like your mail, as we said, so please send us some ideas, comments, or even corrections. We'd love to have that. We will read it on the next podcast. Remember, we need you to subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you like what we're doing, then please rate us high with those wonderful, wonderful stars that help move us up the ladder a little bit so more people can hear the podcast. Before you go, I want to make sure that I also plug our website, which is bohemican.com. It's a site devoted to my experiences here in Bohemia. It is a cornucopia of information. It's a lot to digest, but if you use it as a reference guide to what we're talking about on the podcast, I think it will fill in some of the blanks.
And also come take a look at our sister podcast, History of Alchemy, at historyofalchemy.com. And thank you very much for listening.
Ciao for now.